Advent is the season of waiting, and waiting requires patience. Unfortunately, I'm not a naturally patient person. I often rush through life's experiences, certain that I might miss something if I slow down and wait. So I tend to move fast most of the time. I walk quickly from place to place, frustrated with others' tendencies to stroll. I have been known to yell at my computer, I don't know if you've ever done that, when it seems to take forever to load a new page. And like many parents, I'm a master multitasker, trying to get through each task as quickly as possible, never wasting a moment. Patience is definitely not my strong suit. Patience is something I must consciously work at, although that seems to be getting easier over time. It started to get easier when I turned 40 and I decided to begin my PhD at the University of British Columbia. Perhaps this was my midlife crisis. This wacky idea that I could complete a PhD, continue to volunteer in the community, commute to Vancouver once a week, teach and work part-time as a consultant, all while parenting two small kids. Sure, I said, I can do it. I'm determined to do it. Give me 5 years tops. No problem. I can hear Nancy over there giggling. Well, it took 8 years, eight long, tiring, frustrating, very expensive years. Many, many times I wanted to quit, and I almost did. Sometimes I kept going only because I wanted to show my kids that perseverance is important. Other times my stubbornness got me through the rough patches. And often encouragement and support from family and friends made all the difference. But through that experience and through other experiences in the past 10 years or so, I learned greater patience. I don't remember one specific aha moment necessarily, just a gradual recognition that I needed to focus more on the journey and less on the goal. So I learned to sometimes just focus on putting one foot in front of the other, to focus on small tasks, to lean on others at times, to take breaks when tired, and to celebrate small successes. I also learned to practice gratitude every day, to notice and honor the many gifts that I receive each day, including those times when people in my life have been so, so patient with me. But most of all, I learned to be patient with myself and with others too. I learned greater compassion, understanding and forgiveness, and I became a better friend to myself and to others. Patience, I discovered, is not just a tool we can use to help accomplish our goals. Patience is a form of kindness.
Waiting can be sweet. We are told, make sure this is, we've switched over mics, we're good. We are told that patience is a virtue. And while this may be true, most of us, not unlike Victoria, struggle with it. I don't know how many times I have been somewhere, a coffee shop, a waiting room, a line of some sort, and noted just how many signs of impatience surround me. A disgruntled expression, a tapping toe, an agitated check of a watch or a phone. And I think, well, time matters, of course. We often feel that it is in short supply, that we will never have enough of it. In the midst of this, however, I wonder about the way that we rush about and try to do it all. Does that actually serve us very well? Doesn't that end up making time feel more compressed rather than expansive? One of the many gifts of Advent
is that it can invite us to change our relationship with time, even if just for the 4 weeks of Advent. One of the spiritual memoirists whose work I appreciate, who is an Episcopalian, what you would call up here Anglican, Lauren Winner, spoke at a local seminary in D.C. when I lived there about Advent. She led an Advent day-long retreat at Wesley Seminary in D.C. I don't remember all these years later everything that she had to say about Advent, but I do remember quite vividly her description of the way we think of and move through time, and how she believes adamantly that it actually degrades time itself. She said, think about the way that we talk about time. We're wasting time, we're killing time, we're buying time, we're borrowing time. All of which, she said, sounds financial or transactional. And all of it is problematic, she said. Time is something we manage and dole out. She asked us to ponder for a moment what difference it might make in our lives if we saw time not as a commodity to be managed, but rather as our lives. There, well, that was amazing, right? And our lives that we might instead inhabit. She used that word, and I thought, inhabit. That's fascinating. Time as a space in which to be. Not time as something we have to dole out and divvy up, itemize. Think of how you think about your own calendar. How different might it feel to say, for these 3 hours, I will inhabit this space with these people. Advent, just the word itself, implies the beginning of something new. This is the advent of a new season, the advent of a new time in our lives. Advent is the arrival of something that has not been here before. Our Christian friends and family and neighbors see that something new as the arrival of Jesus, in particular the arrival of a Prince of Peace, a humble babe born in a stable whose ministry of love and justice and inclusion changed the world. And our Christian siblings' hope might change it again. So I wonder, this Advent season, what might enter your world and change it, or you, or even better, both? As we approach the end of a decade, whew, and prepare to usher in a new one, what kind of Advent are we in need of? What might we need to arrive globally? Personally, Advent also tells us that we need to set aside time, weeks, in fact, since Advent began on Sunday, December 1st, to deliberately pay attention and cultivate patience. Advent teaches us that there is a time for being open and receptive to what may yet be and is not yet here. Waiting and anticipation and preparation can be good for us. And this is a countercultural message in a time of instant gratification when one click should do. I also love the fact that Advent signals to us that we need time not just to wait, which is, you know, good enough. I remember the time when I was trying to train my dog. It never worked, but I'd say, wait, wait, wait. Feels like Advent saying that to all of us. Wait, wait, wait. But more than just waiting, Advent reminds us we actually need to prepare ourselves. Let every heart prepare him room. Heaven and nature cannot sing to you if you are running around like a crazy person. Let every heart prepare room. Advent tells us that there must be room in your being for it to arrive and take up some space, inhabit your being. Advent is not just about idle waiting. It's about getting ready. It's about tilling the soil of your heart and your being, examining your readiness for change and transformation. Advent tells us that we will be better able to hear the message of the season and maybe, just maybe, even be accomplices in bringing about the peace and the change that we so desire if we prepare ourselves. So how do you prepare yourself for change? When you think about all of the big changes, all the moments in your life when you were looking at transformation, what did you do to prepare yourself for a change in job or a move of household, the beginning of a new relationship or the birth of a child? What did you do to prepare yourself for any big new undertaking? And those things that you did, would they still work for you now? Or do you need new tools for preparing your heart? Would some form of ritual or journaling help you in tilling the soil of your being? How ready will you be? I have always thought that the holiday season is an odd, very odd juxtaposition of the grand and the humble. In general, the focus is usually on the big and the razzle-dazzle of the holiday season, on the grand gestures and the parties, the lights and the gifts. But I fear we're missing something when we focus on the razzle-dazzle. Almost a little bit of a bait and switch, like the holidays are over here. No, they're not. Are they really in all the razzle-dazzle? The grand gestures, the big things that seem to grow bigger and more intense every year. Have you noticed it? Like the holiday light displays. You go down some blocks and you're like, gosh, the pressure on this block to get better lights. Oh my gosh. Boy, am I glad I don't live on this street. The pressure to find the right and fancy gift. It feels like every year it gets stronger. But the holiday isn't in the razzle-dazzle. It's in that humble stuff. To me, the best and most meaningful parts of the story, and really of all the stories of this season, because you can talk about Hanukkah, which begins at sunset today, solstice and Kwanzaa. The best thing about all of these stories are the quiet and humble, the steady and the steadfast. the lamp that continued to burn for 8 days when it was feared that there was only oil enough for a single night. The gathering of a community that uplifts all of the values and the qualities that have held them from the enslavement of their ancestors to the present time. The pause to acknowledge the change of season and the gradual return of light. In the Christmas story, I am perennially moved by Mary's acceptance of the angel Gabriel's proclamation. I invite you, go back and read the Annunciation scene, because it's just amazing that this Palestinian teenager would just say, okay. And I'm amazed again when I read about the shepherds. Shepherds listening to angels, to this heavenly host that appear to them and leaving their flocks and saying, we'll go see this baby that they tell us now exists. Or the wise men who simply follow a star to offer gifts to a new life that they have been told will make a difference in their world. And how about Joseph? How about Joseph? That steady family man who takes all of these miraculous events in stride and stays by Mary's side through it all. One of my colleagues once said, Joseph is like the ultimate mensch. Regardless of your theology, the Christian story of Jesus' birth is full of characters that we can try to relate to and wonder with. Every year I try to enter the story through one particular character and try to imagine what it might have been like to be them. How would I have reacted if I were Joseph? How might I have participated if I were a shepherd? When do I believe and when am I a skeptic? And how well does that serve me? Because if I want to believe that peace on earth and goodwill to all is still possible, still holds meaning, I might have to prepare my heart. When I was young, the most important thing about Christmas to me was, you guessed it, the presents. I couldn't wait to pull off the paper and see what gifts lie inside those boxes. I was excited and almost giddy with expectation. But looking back now, I can see that it was much more than unwrapping gifts that excited me about the family traditions and experiences that we shared with my extended family each Christmas. I valued the traditions, the moments of stillness. When I remember my grandmother now, who has been dead now for at least 15, 20 years, one of the things I remember most is sitting in the back seat of the car, leaving the midnight Christmas service with her hand on my knee. The lights of the countryside landscape of my grandparents' neighborhood, singing familiar songs, eating familiar foods. I have always liked surprises. I don't need to know what is coming, just that something unexpected is on its way, a gift in every sense. And it seems to me that Advent is like having that childlike sense of anticipation on Christmas morning, not about something that can be wrapped and placed under a tree, but about all that could change in our hearts and in our world. In a world filled with bleak and heartbreaking images every single day, we could most certainly use the advent of something new. What might it be? How might we heed or know of its arrival? How might we participate in bringing it about? How might you remember that childlike quality you had, that anticipation of what might yet be? And how might you help it come into being? Happy Advent, and blessed be.